everyone! It's Words About Books! Are you ready to go on a fun sci-fi adventure through 80s nostalgia to quest for some keys? Cause if you aren't, I'm gonna jump. I don't know, man. I'm Nate. That's Ben. We're gonna discuss Ready Player One.
Now, hold on. You can't just give your real name the first time out.
I'm Shuriken Katana 64.
No, you're Banzai Cowabunga. and I'm Galahad spelled with two fours.
And people are constantly calling you
G4Lahad. Oh, what is up, Honorable Nate-san?
We're going through the final part of Ready Player One, Ben-sama. So, a quick recap. Last time, they got some keys, and they got some gates. And
Dido.
Yeah. And Wade shred a sick guitar solo on his grave after contemplating suicide for an uncomfortable amount of time. And after Wade got the crystal key, the Sixers activate an impenetrable force field that they got in the lunchroom cafeteria of their third grade elementary school. And real fast, we didn't mention Shoto and Dido. They were revealed to not be real brothers. And Ben, do you want to talk about how they actually met?
I think I may have mentioned it very briefly, but yeah, Shoto, and because I mentioned he knows what hikikomori are, so he obviously has like some passing familiarity with modern Japanese culture. But no, Shoto and Daito met in what I guess in a real life. No, they didn't, because
it had to be a virtual.
Yeah, it had to be a virtual hikikomori support group. And if you're not familiar with the term, then you probably didn't read Ready Player One either. Hikikomori is a kind of a Japanese phenomenon, but it happens everywhere. They just gave it a name of mostly young men who kind of fail to launch and just live as shut-ins and obsess over pop culture.
Yeah, it's almost like Ernest is he's coming close to a point at several areas in this book, and then he just kind of shies away from that. Like Wade does not bat an eye hearing this description. Like, oh, they have support groups for that? Like, it's a bad thing?
If I were interested in recovery, I'd attend one of those. But there's nothing wrong with me.
Yeah, I got rid of all the hair on my body so I didn't have to groom it anymore. Nothing wrong with that.
Like, you're some kind of doctor, right? Like, you know that... I don't know, tell me this, because I was kind of wondering this as I read the book. Like, he's not unhygienic, but he is still completely neglecting his appearance.
Yes.
That is a sign of depression,
yes,
right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I don't think you're mentally healthy if you decide you're going to remove all the hair on your body because it's just getting in the way of you and your video game.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you want to do that just for fun, even, like, that's one thing. But if you're doing it so that your video game's VR suit just, like, practically fits you better so you can spend more time in it, that's a little weird. When swimmers shave all their hair, it's like for a thing they do, sometimes socially in real life, and they get paid for doing it, and it's very physically healthy, and I don't know, there's just something about it that is not so, so sad to watch. But we're still back in part two, Nate. We need to move on.
Yeah, let's move on to part three.
As I said in my 10-page review of Ready Player One, if I discussed every time Ernest Cline drove his stupid DeLorean right up to and then immediately passed the point, I'd be here all day.
Yeah, so let's move on to the real important stuff. video games. So the Sixers, they're in what's called Castle Anorak, and that's where the gate most definitely is. But for some reason, they haven't been able to figure out how to open the gate. So they just erected an impenetrable shield around it. And so Wade has to come up with a brilliant idea to take it down from within.
So I was going to ask, why is this impenetrable force field, like, actually impenetrable, you know, compared to the last impenetrable force field? But then I remembered they got an artifact off screen.
Yes, they bought an artifact on Oasis eBay.
That makes, yeah, so off screen they got a thing that means it's, like, super serious this time. This is a real impenetrable force field.
And you can't dig underneath it. You can't teleport through it. It's what we call bad game design. Well, good job, Halliday.
Yeah, but, like, the D&D artifacts, like, they kind of only work when, you know, your party is the only group of people in the game.
So, yeah, Wade decides to message H and Artie and Shoto out of nowhere, and he's like, I got a plan. Bye. And then he tells them how to get the Jade Gate and the Crystal Key. And then, next thing we know, he's getting plasma cut out of his apartment because he owes $20,000 on an IOI credit card, and they're coming to force him to work it off.
And can we mention how Wade, absolutely nothing wrong with this guy, is, what, like, four Xanax deep, still curled into the fetal position, shaking on his floor because he knows they're going to take him into the sunlight for the first time in 5 years.
Yeah. Nothing
it
wrong with that.
It was 5 years, wasn't it? Hang on,
it
I gotta look
months.
That up.
It was 6 months. Because 5 years was the time it took them to get the copper key, and he went outside regularly during that time.
Oh, you're right.
It was six months that he was in that apartment, which is still a very unhealthy amount of time. But we don't have time to think about that, Ben. That's not the important part. The real important part is this weird gender thing that he brings up for some reason.
Oh, what? I forgot about this.
Yeah, this is something that just caught my attention because it's so strange. So he's being carted off with other people, and they're all going to become indentured servants. And there's, like, a large person inside there with him, and he has, like, a mask on. And Wade is like, he's thinking to himself, like, oh, I can't really tell what kind of gender this person is. I decided to think of them as a dude. Is he trying to say something? Like, Ernest? Is he trying to say something with that? Like, it seemed like some weird amount of description for something that doesn't have much going for it in this book.
You know, I guess I'm going to speak in his defense in this case. I'm reasonably certain he is not trying to say anything.
Okay.
I think that's just like Ernest Cline. There's certain points of the book where the style shifts. Like, you can tell, like...
yeah.
You can tell, like, when he's talking about, for example, masturbation. He thinks he is an artiste. And he writes very descriptively and sardonically. And he's trying to have, like, a little witty prose there. But then when he's referencing 80s crap, he just straightforwardly describes it as clearly as he possibly can, as simply as he possibly can. And then, for whatever reason, when Wade was getting peeled out of his apartment, that was one of the, like, witty, prosy type things. Like, if ever he was going for a Neuromancer vibe, I think it was then. Because that's the kind of thing, like, William Gibson would observe. Just like those little things that pop into a person's head. I think that's what he was going for. I don't think he was trying to make any kind of commentary about sex or gender. I think he was just trying to make Wade's observations a little more interesting. And again, it's such a drastic shift from, like, somebody describing text adventures to me for five pages that you're like, oh, I don't know. It got really real when you started talking about, speaking to Neuromancer, like, it's almost like I'm surprised Wade didn't, you know, chew on four octagons or something. Because he mentions exactly how many drugs Wade took and how he's still upset, and it's like, what? Okay. You haven't earned this.
No. Okay, I could buy that he's not making any commentary. I mean, he doesn't.
Do you actually think he was... I mean, in reference to, like, we all know the thing he got in trouble for in Ready Player 2.
I wasn't sure what he was going for here. I don't think he was trying to make a point, but I did find it, like, it stuck out because it's not something you would expect to find from him.
No, like, that, like, into-the-mind observation of Wade is so sparse. I mean, he's trying. If he's trying to say anything, he's trying to say, see, I'm a novelist. If you want my honest opinion.
Yeah, the world isn't fair. We've already gone over that. All right, so now let's talk about how IOI is secretly, like, the best corporation on the planet. So, on the way to IOI headquarters, where Wade is going to be an indentured servant to pay off this $20,000 debt, he sees a bunch of homeless people begging in the streets. He describes how cold it is outside. And then IOI takes him in, gives him a living quarters, three square meals, and a job to pay off his debt. Yes, but it's better than being in the street. What's up with that?
I mean, like I said, I don't want to beat
too
many
dead
horses.
A swing and a miss.
I don't want to beat too many dead horses here, but, like, let's just continue on with the Neuromancer comparison. Urban sprawl is a thing. It's not something you hear about so much these days, but back in the actual 80s, that was something they were becoming kind of concerned about. There's just shopping center after shopping center after shopping center where there used to be farmland or little main streets. And that's something that William Gibson comments on a lot in Neuromancer. And he's actually making commentary on it. It's not direct and in your face. It's just subtle. It's like people are a little less happy than they might otherwise be. It's supposed to be kind of creepy and kind of sad to you, as somebody who knows what the alternative is. And Ernest Cline has these moments of world building like that, but you can't really half-ass that kind of storytelling. So we wind up with a very inconsistent view of what's going on in the world. Like, apparently everybody's supposed to be poor, but everybody Wade knows is not poor. And jobs are supposed to be hard to come by.
Yeah, didn't it say like a 2-month wait list just to work at McDonald's?
Yeah, and I kept coming back to that one because Wade easily gets a job. And he hacked himself some credentials, but it doesn't seem like it's that hard to get credentials. In fact, it doesn't seem that much harder to get credentials than it is today, because Wade mentioned that there are still scholarships and colleges and things, and that the only reason he, for all his brilliance, doesn't have one is because he spent so much time gunting, he didn't get the grades to qualify for a scholarship. And it's like, well, maybe you should have done that instead of this one in billions chance of hitting the lottery, essentially.
Yeah, but it all paid off. So, you know, that's the lesson here. If it pays off, it's okay. You can gamble your life savings in Vegas as long as you win, Ben.
But you find yourself wondering, why would anyone need indentured servants?
Yes. Why would they need indentured servants?
Like, A,
they could automate it.
They could automate it. B, there are a bunch of people who are probably willing to come, like, so the indentured servant thing is kind of like, it's set up like the old mining town company store, where you just you live in the mining town. Like they give you a paycheck, but you pay them rent because you have to live in the apartments they own and you have to shop at the store they provide.
Yeah, you can never pay it off.
Yeah, and so you can never pay it off. And they'll lend you as much money as you want, but you got to keep working for them.
Yeah.
And that's what this indentured servitude is set up like. But those mining towns, they didn't need to go in and like grab debtors. Like things were just so bad that people volunteered for it.
Right.
And
I bet if IOI went out on the street and said, "Hey, if you work for us, we'll give you a place to stay and 3 square meals," I bet everyone would be clamoring for that.
yeah, and the relationship would be so much less adversarial. Like you're essentially putting people in prison, and I got to imagine you'd get all the same sorts of problems you would get from prison. It's very inconsistent. We need IOI to be evil, and he hasn't really demonstrated yet why. I mean, I guess he did with them blowing up
They blew up a trailer and killed a guy.
But we're not even sure why they did any of that.
Because we needed a villain that you can hate. You needed a cookie cutter, one dimensional villain. He's got an evil mustache that he twirls while cackling, and he's trying to run over your girl on the train tracks.
Well, here's the other thing I don't understand is that I mean, so many people have talked about this, the GSS and IOI, their business models are not that horribly different. Like IOI provides internet access to everybody,
Yeah, yep, pretty
and
much.
so the Oasis can't exist without IOI.
Right. It's dumb. It's dumb because he's Wade hates the evil corporation while also worshiping another corporation almost exactly like it. James Halliday was not a saint, and he actively drained resources from the world into his own vault of money.
Well, and that's kind of my thing is I don't necessarily even believe this, but if you are a person who is going to be like this anarchist socialist or whatever, there is no ethical consumption under capitalism, Wade. You can't consume GSS products ethically because they're still operating in a capitalist model.
Yeah, I don't he doesn't again. Ernest drives right past a point.
But that's the thing, like even Halliday and even Ogden, who I like Ogden as a character, even Ogden has this kind of like he has that Steve Jobsian anti-authority.
Yeah, he goes on a news show. He's
Yeah.
being an ass.
But like Steve Jobs, he's totally unaware of the irony of that, you know, you're a rich man from a rich family and like your biggest qualification was exploiting your friend.
Yeah.
Now in Ogden's case it seems to be the reverse, like Halliday kind of exploited him, but yeah, let's be real, Wozniak did all the heavy lifting there and Steve
Yep.
Jobs just looked good in a turtleneck. But I digress. I don't even know what we're talking about anymore.
Yeah, we got off the rails. So real quick, I think I get the purpose of this next part. But when Wade is he becomes an indentured servant and they take a urine sample and a bunch of blood samples and they do a medical test and he's like, they're gonna catalog everything. And I think it's supposed to make you think like, oh my God, his privacy was just destroyed. But for what reason would they catalog everything? Who's gonna go over this data? Why are they going over this data? They put ankle bracelets on everyone, and they get an ear cam on everyone, and they have a camera in everyone's room, and he's like, "Oh, they're gonna be watching me." It's like, you know how many people would need to be employed to watch every single one of you guys? I just don't. I get that it's
Again,
supposed to
unless they
be like,
automated it.
yeah. Well, they didn't. We know they didn't. They probably employ like 100,000 people just to watch all the debtors because they're wildly inefficient.
To be honest with you, I don't even remember this. Like,
I remembered this because I was just like, who cares? They have all your data. Guess what? They probably have all your data anyway. I know it's to make them look like the bad guys, but again, the alternative is starving or freezing to death on the street outside.
I was gonna say, I'd imagine the blood, urine, all that stuff is they're testing for drugs.
He said right? They were going to catalog. I think they probably also did a type and screen. But did you know that DNA testing, that's illegal, and IOI would never do anything illegal, Wade?
Well, they wouldn't have access to the database to compare it to, right? I mean,
yeah, they wouldn't.
So they could take your DNA sample and have their own little database of DNA samples, but they're not going to know who you're actually, like, what the government keeps on file. Of course, the government having your DNA on file is, I guess we trust the government in post-apocalyptic nuclear holocaust future.
Yeah, that government that exists and...
They're pretty stable, not corrupt.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the real government has Vice President Will Wheaton of the Oasis.
Oh, my God.
He's protecting,
I forgot about that.
He's protecting all of our rights, even though teleportation fees prevented Wade from going anywhere.
But yeah, so he's in, like, super 1984. They're watching his every move. Before we go on too much further, because I don't think you're going to dwell on this, I just want to call out, like, what kind of... He winds up being tested, and of course, he's, like, super smart boy, so he gets a cushier job, and his cushier job is in tech support.
Yeah.
But what in God's name is he doing tech support for? Because the only call we see him take is somebody who was not satisfied with their digital eBay auction.
Yeah, they got a sword, a flaming sword that they couldn't use.
And he has to explain the rules of the Oasis video game to this guy who's calling about not... Like, he's calling IOI when he should be calling GSS?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how there are tech support jobs if there are indentured servants doing it for cheaper. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Why can't I use this sword? I don't know, sir. I don't run the Oasis.
Yeah, you're... That'd be like, I need support for World of Warcraft, and you're calling Target.
And I'm sure that does happen, but I'm also sure Target's just like, yeah, you're going to have to call Blizzard tech support.
Of course, Wade decides to verbally abuse this guy, because his name is Hotcock 007, so it's okay to abuse him. You know that you can both be assholes, right, Wade? Like, just because he sucks doesn't mean you can't also... not suck, right?
Oh, I think Wade is well aware that he sucks.
I don't think he does. I don't think he does.
I think Wade is a deeply miserable person.
I would like for them to explore that then. Because he comes very... Again, how many times do I have to say? He comes so close to the point and then he just veers off. I think he is a miserable person because healthy, happy people don't paint the window black, get rid of all their hair, and stay inside for 6 months and never go outside or see people and actively complain, or I guess I should say they're actively talking about committing suicide. That's not a healthy person, but you wouldn't know it from all the wisecracks and...
So I read an interview as I was researching for this with...
This book is just letting all the air out of me. Go on.
I read an interview with Ernest Cline, and Ernest Cline mentioned this. It's a quote from Stephen King, actually Stephen King this time.
Oh my God.
Who said, paraphrasing a little bit because I don't remember the exact quote, but it's something like, when you write a novel, you will inevitably reveal everything about yourself to the world.
Oh no.
End of statement. Take that for what you will.
Yep. So Wade has to find a way out of this camera system, but he's already got a plan for figuring his way out of this security system.
Of course he does. Of course he already did a thing that... Of course he already solved this problem decades before it happened.
There's a short time skip, and he's like, I faked narcolepsy to get stimulants so I can take them at night and stay up all night, which I don't think that IOI would give you stimulants and then not watch you take them, but okay, Wade, you, whatever. So he takes
also, that shit works like once.
Yeah, you definitely can't just, eventually your body is just going to say no. It's going to crash. That's why they call it a crash. But I digress.
I knew a guy in college who snorted like 6 Adderall. And then I don't know what the dosage was, but he snorted like 6 Adderall. He stayed up for 48 hours straight, and then he slept for like another 24 straight.
Yes, exactly. Your body doesn't just stay up forever. That's not how it works.
No, like we were talking to him, and then like the next second we looked over and he was asleep on his desk.
Yeah.
He slept so long we almost called an ambulance. But no, yeah, tell me your funny story of drug abuse and suicide.
Yeah, so this funny guy, he does drugs to stay up so that he can hack into a panel in his room. And 6 months ago, he bought codes to IOI. He never, I don't know if I'll ever use them, but I want to have them just in case. And God, it would really suck if, the codes were outdated or whatever, but they're not. So he gets into a panel in his
room. Can I teach you real quick? Can I teach you another fun 80s bit of computer trivia?
Sure.
I'm going to teach you the term script kiddie.
Yeah.
And that
I
is
know
somebody
this one.
That is somebody who likes to pretend to be a hacker by using hacking tools written by other people. They weren't well liked.
No. Even I know that, and I did not know much of anything about code.
Yeah, but like I'm just saying, if you're gonna appropriate all this like 80s computer nerd hacker culture,
Wade would not be liked.
No, Wade would. I guess he's no dilettante. He did his 80s. He watched a lot of 80s movies, but when it comes time to do any actual work, well, the only tech support he can actually give is, "You're too low level for that sword, noob." So yeah, Wade hacks the thing and he does a thing.
Yeah, he hacks his cameras and then he sets up this thing so he can get into the server and download, and okay, I know this is a minor complaint, but he downloads 10 zettabytes. Ben, do you know how much data that is? And is that like, is that legitimate? Is that something you can do?
That's the future.
The world first exceeded a zettabyte in digital data usage, in global usage, in 2012, and he downloaded 10 of them.
I would imagine.
That's 10 trillion gigabytes.
I'd let it go, and I'll tell you why I'd let it go.
I couldn't, Ben.
Because,
but I'll let you talk me out of it.
Because, now if we're talking like our ordinary video surveillance footage, databases, stuff like that, yeah, that's stretching it a bit, but if they're somehow storing like recordings and reconstructions of the Oasis, all that like data about how to render a fully like
that's
immersive.
Fair.
Yeah.
All right. I'm willing to let it go just this once. But yeah, then Wade, while he's digging around, he's like, "Oh my God, they have a file on Shoto and Artie."
Boy, I'd love to know. I'd love to know what he's using to like scan through all that.
The answer is shut up. And yeah, so he's like, "Oh my God, they know where Shoto and Artie are, and there's an email where they're just openly discussing kidnapping these two people."
They know where they are. They've known for weeks where they are. But now that I'm here to read it, it's all going to go down tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't make any sense because they killed Daito. They were perfectly content with offing him. But they're like,
well,
oh, no.
You only needed one of them.
Yeah. Yeah. You only needed
essentially
one
the
token
same character.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
What's why when you said the high five, I was like, were there five of them? Yeah. Oh, right. There were two Japanese kids.
Yeah, because one of them was expendable. Actually, they're both expendable, as we'll find out very quickly. So Wade like figures out, oh, they can't get into this door because it requires three keys because these idiots don't know their Schoolhouse Rock. What bunch of idiots. But I've got to go save Artie and Shoto. So Wade's original plan was he had a bank transfer coming that was just going to wipe out his debt, and I guess IOI was going to be cool with that. But instead he's like, no, I've got to get out of here. So he gets a maintenance uniform. I don't remember why, and I don't care to go back. And he disables all of his cameras, and then he just kind of like, he just walks out.
Oh, I think he just starts ordering shit to be delivered to a cubicle next to an empty cubicle next to him.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And because the guy delivering it is another indentured servant, nobody...
he doesn't like, give a shit.
Yeah.
I don't know why the boss wants all this stuff delivered to this empty cubicle, but I'm not going to question it.
This guy named Wade Rules keeps ordering all this shit. And I...
So yeah, he walks out, and here's the tension. He's down on the ground floor. He's trying to blend in with the crowd, and then he's like, oh no, I've got plastic shoes on. They're going to discover me for sure. But then they don't. And then someone's like, sir, your ear is bleeding from where the camera was. It's like gushing blood. It's like a river of blood is exiting his ear. And Wade's like, thank you, ma'am. And then he leaves. And that's
it. Shuffles out in his little plastic slippers.
Yeah, that's it. He just leaves. The end.
And then he buys a gun.
Yeah, I forgot about that. He does buy a gun.
Did you? We're going to have to cover this on the podcast sometime, but you remember that Harry Potter fanfic I made you read?
Oh, God, yeah.
Or she's like, and then Voldemort showed up, and he handed me a gun. That's how I felt when Wade buys the gun. I'm like, oh my God.
He never even uses it, though.
Yeah, I was like, oh my God, this is going to get good. Is Wade actually going to, like, in the real world, is Wade actually going to start doing stuff? And so I will say, like, this part.
This is literally Chekhov's gun. Like, if you're going to have it, you've got to use it.
Yeah.
And he doesn't.
Well, and like this part of the book, something needed to happen in the real world at some point in this book.
And it did, Ben. He became indentured and then he escaped.
It was
exciting as I just described it.
But it 100% feels like it happened because either Ernest Cline knew or his publisher knew or one of his beta readers told him something should happen in the real world because that's
real stakes.
Well, that's how these stories always go, right? Like, we want to pretend that this is an original story, but it's not. There's been plenty of stories about people who live and die in battle and love and virtual worlds. And at some point they always have to do something in the real world because that's like out of their comfort zone. So he knew Wade had to do something in the real world, and this is what he thought of for him to do. And it's almost like he didn't even need to do it.
No,
because like all of IOI's stuff is on the internet, and there's no reason those codes only work from inside the company.
It's behind their firewall. That's a thing, right?
Right. So take your genius hacker skills or your infinite wealth.
Yeah, the script.
Buy somebody who's on the VPN and run your thing from there.
Well, he didn't, because he needed to get some stimulants and he needed to hack into a wall.
Wade's dumb. And I talk about this in my like 10-page review. I'm like, he's as dumb as he is selfish, but I get the impression Ernest Cline only realizes he's one of those things. I think Ernest Cline intends Wade to be selfish, and he intends that to be a character flaw in Wade, though Wade has no arc that addresses it, but he doesn't realize that Wade is also very stupid.
Oh, he does have a character arc, Ben. It's at the very end. I'll explain all about it when we get there.
All right. Well, let's power through.
He's real dumb, though. You're right. So, yeah, Wade sends a message to Artie and Shoto, and he's like, hey, you're being watched. Get up and leave right now. Don't take anything. And they do, and they are not followed, and they get out and they get away without any issue. You're being watched? IOI sucks, apparently.
You're being watched? This message is being intercepted and read? They already know?
Yeah. Wade goes to like an internet cafe and they all meet back in H's basement. The high four. Doesn't have quite the same ring to it. Oh, yeah, I guess I also need to point out, Wade eliminated his debt. He does not eliminate anyone else's debt. He leaves everyone else to be indentured servants. Because fuck them. Because he makes a point of saying, like, well, my debt's not even real. And I guess, like, the implication is, like, well, your debt is real. So, like, you get to work here forever, idiot.
Wade's goal is not, nor is it ever going to be, to fix the world. Now, Ready Player 2 may address some of this, and I kind of do actually want to read Ready Player 2 because...
Oh, my God.
I know. I'm actually interested to see how... Like, I want to see if Ernest Cline has improved. Because I'm pretty hard on him in this podcast and in my essay.
And in real life, every time we talk about him.
I don't... I really don't like this book, its themes, or its message. I think it highlights the worst aspects of geek culture.
Oh, I was going to say humanity in general, but yeah. No, you're absolutely like, right.
I really don't like the message this book is sending, but I can understand how somebody likes it. And I don't think you're a bad person for liking it. I don't think you're necessarily endorsing these things just because you like this book, but I'm interested to see how he improves because Wade's goal, he should slowly come to the realization, especially through his adventures in the real world, that Artemis is right, but he doesn't ever realize that Artemis is right, and he doesn't team up with her and set aside his... Like, there's never a moment in the story where they each realize... Our goals, our individual goal of doing this on our own so that we can reap the entire reward for ourselves is selfish.
No, the opposite happens at the end of part one where they all agree to not join forces.
Well, and that's fine for part one, but part two, you know, I'm going to explain how stories work here. So your characters are supposed to reach their lowest moment. Around part two. Then they're supposed to learn a lesson or acquire something that gives them the ability to overcome their challenge. And that's
okay,
kinda...
Ben, that's how this story works, okay? He's at his lowest moment when he's taken to IOI, and then he learns a lesson, and that lesson is you need to have three people to unlock the crystal gate, and so he learns to not be selfish the end.
His lowest moment is when Artemis dumps him.
Oh, no. That's a little early.
Yes, it is. It's in the wrong...
All right, let me revise it. Okay, so already dumping him, that's his lowest moment, and then he learns a lesson because he plays a perfect game of Pac-Man.
What he should have realized... Okay, here's how this should go. And here's, like, I can sense Ernest Cline so close. It's like we've said before. He's so close to knowing what he needs to do. He knows the shape this story is supposed to have. But he doesn't on an instinctual level understand how to make it happen. So he has, like, the vague outline of a good story. And then he just fills it, he colors it in poorly. And what should happen is Artemis dumps Wade. Wade hits his lowest moment. Wade realizes he's an idiot and a jerk. And Wade realizes somehow, some way, like maybe Sorrento taunts him or something, that Artemis is in danger. And he has to take some risk on himself, even though he doesn't think he's going to win her back, even though he knows he doesn't deserve her. He takes that risk because she's his friend and it's the right thing to do. And he goes in and he puts himself in real physical danger And he discovers maybe he makes some kind of friend at the IOI place. Somebody who's an indentured servant who explains
the way... No, he doesn't even interact with those guys because they're dead to him.
But yeah, he meets somebody who can explain to Wade, you know, world sucks, man. I don't deserve to be here. None of us deserve to be here. This isn't right. They can't do this to human beings. And Wade's like, I have spent so much time in this game that I am blind to what's going on just two blocks away from my own apartment.
Yeah.
And
he goes, I didn't care before, but I care now.
Well, it's literally like, this is supposed to be an 80s movie, right? This, you could even get away with that in this book, because this book is supposed to be a paint-by-numbers 80s movie. It's supposed to hit you right in the feels. It should be a very simple hero's
journey.
Ben,
you know what you're doing again? You're writing a better book. You need to cut it out.
But I just got to say this, because it should be a very simple hero's journey, and it's very easy to do. All you need is for
literally
Wade,
a formula.
All you need is for Wade to realize at this point when he meets some people who are in trouble, because Ernest is so very close. He sees the homeless people, and he's like, that doesn't... Something about this doesn't seem right, but I can't put my figure. Oh, the thought's gone. I gotta think about the Oasis. Like,
that is exactly what happens.
and like, if he had just realized that Artemis was right, like, that's the key ingredient that's missing. They had this big blowout because Wade is selfish and he doesn't understand her larger goals. And if Wade got on board with Artemis's larger goals, then they could meet as equals and they could really, like, have a good relationship, and it would make sense that they get together in the end. And it'd still be cheesy. It'd still be a reach because he's fucking creepy, but I could buy it. I could forgive it, but he doesn't do that.
No.
And he doesn't do that. And I'm sorry. This is why I want to read Ready Player Two, though, because I don't know if Ernest Cline has changed in the decade since this book was written, but I really believe Wade is a self-insert and Ernest Cline is not prepared to accept in his heart of hearts that Artemis is right. He knows she should be. He knows society expects Wade to save the world, but I really don't think Ernest Cline, who wrote this book, believed that the world was worth saving.
No, he didn't. But we'll get into that, Ben. It's the greatest story arc, character arc of all time. It's coming. You just have to wait a little longer. But yeah, speaking of Wade being fucking creepy, when he tells Artie to leave, he mentions that, like, I saw your picture. You look even more beautiful in real life.
Yeah, shouldn't have done that.
No. No, you shouldn't have done that. It's a gigantic red flag, buddy.
That's a little pro tip from me to you. That's a little pro tip from me to you, Wade.
So beautiful.
Don't desperately throw yourself at people.
Can I send you dick pics?
He's the kind of guy that would.
He is.
He's the kind of guy that would send an unsolicited dick pic.
Oh, God. Yeah, so she's upset at him, but only for looking at her picture, not for the, like, creepy, weird thing at the end of their message. And they all form a plan. That shield is coming down in 36 hours, so it's time to alert the Gunting Clan.
Why is that shield coming down in 36 hours, Nate?
You'll find out when the shield
did
is
Wade
coming
do
down.
Did Wade do something off-screen, like, 5 weeks ago?
Yeah, he did something off-screen inside of IOI in order to take the shield down. You'll figure it out as the shield comes down. You know,
did you ever see that Rick and Morty where they make fun of the heist movies?
Yes. That's what this is.
How much Rick and Morty would there be in this book if this book came out after Rick and Morty?
Oh, God. Well, if we ever read Ready Player 2.
Speaking of toxic fandoms, come at me. I don't even care.
Oh, God. So, yeah, real quick, let's do a quick skit. I'm going to be Wade, and you're going to be just the head of some random Gunter clan, because I need your help to attack the Sixers once that shield is down, all right?
All right.
All right. Hey, so, IOI, they're going to win the contest and control the Oasis, so I need your help. They killed a man. They had evidence of them murdering a man in their database. And here's that message. Can I count on you to help us out?
What's in it for me?
You will make sure that IOI does not get control of the Oasis.
What are you going to do with the Oasis?
I'm going to leave it as it is.
Why don't you just give everybody a cut of it? Why don't, you know, we have this be like a player-owned game?
Because I'm, it's my egg.
No, you can't get the egg without me, so it's kind of our egg, isn't it?
Yeah, but like I'm the one physically getting it. So.
Yeah, but I'm the one like physically throwing myself at the shield. So.
Yeah, but you don't even like the Sixers anyway, so like.
I don't like you. Hate to break it to you.
Well, I mean, you don't even know me. Maybe if we went
I've
to
seen,
a
I've
club.
Seen your many I've seen your many sellout endorsement deals. I can't go anywhere without seeing you. So yeah, I think I know you well enough.
Well, how about this? How about I talk to you about masturbation? And
how about
like...
$1 billion? How about you give me $1 billion?
But like, that's my money. Like I'm winning the contest, so that's my money. But like,
man,
you should still help
good
out.
Good luck winning that contest, man.
But
I can't wait to watch you do that.
But in the book, for some reason, they all sign up to throw their lives at the Sixers in order to give Wade more money than any one person should ever have.
Because Wade's supposed to be genuinely cool.
Yeah. Well, he's not.
And IOI, like, everybody's supposed to... Like, Wade's deal to them is, I'll keep the Oasis exactly as it is. Perfect. You remember how I thought, like... At the beginning of this story that I couldn't even participate in the Oasis Easter egg hunt because I'm
too poor.
You can't
teleport anywhere because you're broke.
Yeah. And how, like, I was bullied mercilessly for years before I qualified for an Oasis public school that was actually funded by somebody else. The Oasis didn't even give that away for free. Yeah, there's a lot you could do with the Oasis, buddy, that...
No. It's perfect as it is because he controls it.
See, that's another thing. Ernest Cline knew... This should end with a big coming together of like all the Gunters. He knew that like, that's the 80s movie ending. But he in his heart of hearts doesn't want to share.
No. It gets worse than that though, as we're going to talk about here in a moment. So yeah, they're like, well, how can we do this over like from our internet cafes? Like We're not going to be able to pull this off on this crappy connection. And you, dear listener, if you remembered, a stack of comic books fell over 2 episodes ago. Well, guess what? That was Ogden Morrow.
Creeping on them.
With his invisible powers and his ability to enter any chat room he wants. He definitely wasn't abusing that, and neither was Halliday, I'm sure. I would never trust those idiots. I mean, I wouldn't in the first place, but, like, I would never trust them again. But he's like, hey, how about y'all come to my place? And they're all like, all right.
See, it's one of those things where it's like, if you're the administrator, like, if you're a GM in a video game, that makes sense. That's the kind of powers you might have, like... Video game chats, like if you're in a video game chat, you really don't have an expectation of privacy. Like you don't, like, you know, those chat logs are stored unencrypted on some server somewhere
that Wade probably has access to now. Yes.
You wouldn't expect there to be privacy in the Oasis. You would expect the Oasis administrators to be able to hop into chat rooms if it were a game, which it is not. It is a full blown Second Life that has replaced the basic internet. And so this means not only can Ogden Morrow hop in to any chat room, he can hop into his competitors' chat rooms. Like, I have to imagine IOI does business in the Oasis.
I'm sure.
So he can technically just, like, if Ogden Morrow doesn't like IOI, it's a huge conflict of interest. It'd be against every law there is. And again... Okay, it's a stupid little book about the 80s. Let's not maybe compare it to Neuromancer. I know I keep coming back to that. It's just the most ready example. Let's not compare it to The Matrix. Let's not compare it to Willy Wonka. It is none of these things. It is trash. If you want to compare it to other trash, we can have a conversation. Like, I will happily compare it to Twilight. I put this on a Twilight level.
I put this below a Twilight level.
I'm like, you don't question the logic of how the vampires can run at 300 kilometers an hour. I won't question the logic of Ogden Morrow's admin powers.
Yeah. Yeah. So Ogden's like, all right, I'll get you all tickets to my house in Oregon, I think it is. And or no, it was everyone gets tickets and everyone gets a limo. Except for Wade and H. You guys got a carpool to the airport.
Hey, time out. Was Ogden in the room when Shoto told Wade that Daito died?
He could have been.
Why didn't he give him tickets then?
He said that he won't interfere with the hunt, but he's already done that. He's killed a bunch of Sixers.
And a child has already died.
Yeah. Well, because you only need one, I guess. You need to have that. It's a high
true.
Five.
It's
they got
true.
Rid of the pinky or the ring finger. One of those two.
It's so true that like Shoto and Daito are one character and you really only need one of them.
Yeah. Yeah. They're cardboard cutouts. So yeah, H and Wade, you guys got a carpool. No limo for you. H is in an RV that's just bumming around the northeast. I guess the Badlands don't extend into the northeast because it's just a regular RV. It's not like an armored RV like that bus was. But, you know, that bus was two parts ago. I'm not even gonna say why that's contradictory.
Oh, but H had money to get off planet in the Oasis.
Well, H was a FPS legend.
Yeah, how did H get going with that?
By being an FPS legend?
Yeah, but, like, how did H get started with that from a van down by the river?
It's possible H... Well, H was in the Oasis before that, right?
So was
H
Wade.
H talked about her mom. Oh my God. Blowing my mind. H is not a dude, but in fact a black woman who's also a lesbian. And she says that her mom said that the Oasis is the best thing that ever happened to black women because they can pretend to be white men is the implication. I don't think we have time to go into as thorough detail as to why that's wrong and just bad.
Oh boy, that really does sum up the H reveal is I don't think we have time. But yeah, so in the movie, Steven Spielberg wisely avoids this problem by having H's avatar not be a white man. H's avatar is some kind of like monster person.
oh my God.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, Steven Spielberg wasn't about to do this. So, and again, don't get me wrong. Like, so first off, a lot of talk about like, there's the level of being a black woman is not a twist. Like it really should. It really should.
What about if she is also a lesbian? Is that a sufficient enough twist for you, Ben?
Well, that was actually a relief to Wade because then all the talk of boobs and women was not.
That really was.
He was like, oh, okay. I wasn't embarrassing myself. We did genuinely bond over objectifying women. That's what he said.
Like that's not word for word, but it's basically what he said. Yes.
Yeah. The main problem with it, at least as I see it, is what you said that Ernest Klein points out, and again in a moment of right up to the point, he says the reason H uses a white male avatar is so that she can just avoid dealing with racism and sexism. And then he drives right past the point by saying that is the best thing that ever happened to black women. I think he intended that to be sarcastic. I mean, I think...
No, I think that he was intending this as like, well, when you're in the internet, you don't have race or sex or whatever. You're just beings of intellect connecting with other intellectual beings. It doesn't matter if you're gay or straight or black or a unicorn or a centaur or whatever.
As long as we all present white and male.
That is, yes. That is the flaw.
Yeah, I did read it a little differently. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt on this one.
I'm not.
I read it as a very clumsy attempt at commentary and saying that...
No, because then he's like, well, my mom had her own bigotry as well, because when I came out as a lesbian, she threw me out of the house, and I was like, well, she's also, like, that's not the only thing she's a bigot towards.
Okay, I don't think her mom's dream was to be a white man. I think the Oasis just gave her the option of not dealing with racism and sexism in every interaction. But I think I will give
her... Isn't that just sweeping the problem under the rug?
It is, but it's also not her mom's responsibility to...
Okay, that's fair.
...be on the front line of that issue.
That's
so
fair.
So, like, I could see wanting to maybe just turn it off, but I do, like, obviously the preferred solution would be, what if it just weren't a big deal to not be a white man? Like, what if you could just get treated like a person no matter how you presented or what race you were? He could have done a little bit better by, like, coming out and saying that, because he has such bad takes on other things that it makes you want to not give him the benefit of the doubt. I think he's coming at it from a genuine place. I think he's trying to say the right thing. I don't think he's a racist is what I'm saying. I don't think he's racist. I just think he doesn't...
No, I don't think that either. I think that what he comes off as, though, when he says that is...
Stupid?
Yeah, not...
it's just ignorant. It's
yes, okay, that's the perfect word.
Yeah, it's an ignorant take on that particular issue. It would be almost better if you just hadn't tackled it.
No.
Or it's one of those things, like, when you have a major publisher, and especially, like, I imagine when you get the signing bonus that Ernest Cline got, considering how fast, like, the movie rights and everything went, you could probably hire a few
backup writers to clean this up.
I was going to say
editors,
sensitivity readers who could give you some tips on how to handle that. Like, if you want to have a scene with, for example, two Japanese teens, maybe you could find a sensitivity reader who's grew up in Japan and could give you some pointers on how they might talk or something like that.
Yeah. It turns out they don't bow 400 times. Maybe take that part out.
But you could also give, you know, you could find, obviously you could find a black woman who could read this and say, like, it's okay, but maybe you could just clarify this point, or you could really sort of hammer home, maybe spend a little bit more time discussing what you actually mean by this, especially, like, maybe cut the treatise on masturbation. If you're feeling the page length is getting a little long, you could cut that and maybe...
Nope.
Develop this.
Nope. That should actually be in the movie. Let's get that in there. Oh, boy. So, yeah. Anything else you need to say? Because, like I said, there's literally not enough time to cover.
No.
All right. Well, if it helps with anything, Wade's not bothered by the fact that she is a black woman.
No, because they connected on a purely mental level. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Wade, by the way, why are you totally hairless?
Yeah, no one will ever bring that up. Where are your eyebrows and, like, your hair?
Are you actively bleeding right now?
So everyone meets up at Ogden's. Shoto somehow got there first, even though he was in Japan. Let's not even unpack that. Let's just move on. Wade, so everyone goes to their pods. They don't meet Artie. She's already in her pod. But Wade stops before he goes in. He's like, hey, Og, why do you and Halliday have fallen out? And Og is like, yeah, Halliday, turns out he wanted to fuck my wife. Like, he wanted to kidnap her before we got married? And like, yeah, he wanted to just go to town on her, but he never expressed his feelings. So like,
that is not okay. I do have to defend. That is not what he said.
He wanted to pound my wife. Is that?
That's not what he said. What? Okay, Ernest Cline did handle it a little more tastefully than that.
He really shouldn't have at this point.
He did say the way he made it sound was that Halliday just, from Ogden's perspective, Halliday just one day stopped talking to him, started treating him like crap, gave him the cold shoulder. It was right after he got married. And then he found out, after Halliday realized he was terminally ill, that Halliday was in love with Ogden's wife. And
he wanted to slam
that. After they got married, he couldn't stomach being around them anymore. And so he pushed them away.
Yeah. Yeah. Halliday was a very ill man.
She was the only woman he ever loved. And the
only one who ever really talked to.
Well, and the only time he could talk to her confidently was in character as Anorak during their D&D games.
I've got this strange idea that maybe that's not what love is.
No, I was going to say he didn't love her so much as he was heterosexual and she was the only woman he ever interacted with.
Yeah.
So, obviously, he never... I think they went on one terrible date.
Yeah, I think they did. And then afterwards, Og asked her out.
I don't even think Ogden knew they went on a date. I don't even know if she knew it was a date.
I doubt it because he never expressed his feelings to either of them. So
no,
she couldn't have.
Yeah, so Halliday...
So she was doing what Wade did to Artie. Interesting.
If this book had a theme, it was that Wade is Halliday, only without the ability to make world-changing technology.
All right, are you ready for the final confrontation?
Yeah.
So the High Four show up in their giant robots. Artie is in a girl robot, and Shoto is in a Japanese robot. You know how, like, people were upset that the first Black Ranger was a black man and the first Yellow Ranger was an Asian woman? I'm just going to... Just food for thought.
And the white girl was the Pink Ranger?
Yeah, exactly. So, it's just food for thought. Just pointing that out. So, they all show up, and also a bunch of Gunter clans show up to help them out, even though they're not going to get paid or, like, they're not going to get anything.
Mine didn't. We sat this one out.
Nolan is like... I've got Mecha Godzilla, and also some of the Sixers behind him have Voltron, but it's not important because they're going to die immediately. So Wade is like, I'm confident the shield will go down. And what had happened is Wade programmed a robot in the Oasis to pick up a bomb as like an ordnance order, walk it up to the wizard with the force field orb, and then detonate the bomb and kill the wizard and bring the shield down. And then a battle happens. And Voltron dies immediately. But no one can stop Mechagodzilla. And Wade is like, alright, well, we only need 3 people at the gate. Anyone who's read this book to this point is like, well, it's obviously, there's 4 of them. And one of them is not Wade's love interest or best friend. So it's that guy who's not making it to the gate. But Wade is like, I'm going to surprise the reader. I'm going to offer to distract Nolan while you 3 sneak around him to the gate. And Shoto's like, that's a great idea. Except, I will do that! And he kamikaze bonsais Mechagodzilla.
Okay, can I say, though?
Yeah.
I said in the last time I accidentally cursed, I didn't hate this. I didn't hate this scene because... This is the one time where I can safely say Wade was confronted with a problem dealing with Mechagodzilla. I can't believe I'm saying this.
I cringed a little when you said that. I was that, like, did he really?
I'm working with what I've got here. I'm desperately trying to pay this man a compliment. So Wade... has to deal with Mechagodzilla.
Shoto does first, and he dies in the process.
Well, this is the one time where, like, he didn't have it solved 5 months ago. I keep using that number five off screen. So yeah. Like when
he actually pays off the Ultraman capsule by using it.
Shoto attacks Mechagodzilla, and Shoto has a reason to do that because Sorrento had Daito killed, so there is motivation that was set up and is now being paid off. Wade's robot is destroyed, so how could Wade even hope to fight? Well, wait, there was a thing that was set up that's now about to be paid off. And I like this.
It's the only time in the book that that happens, I think.
I was dangerously close to feeling something.
Yeah, and then he effortlessly destroys the invincible Godzilla machine, and then they make it inside, and they realize...
How does he destroy it with...
Ultraman. He Ultramans it to death.
Okay, he just does the Ultraman beam, and...
I think he hits Mechagodzilla, so he falls on his back, and then he's like a turtle, and then he gets Ultraman beamed.
He's like a man in a large rubber suit.
Yeah.
Oh, do you know, I forget which Godzilla it was. Here's another little piece of 80s trivia for you, or 60s as it may be. I don't remember which Godzilla movie this was. One of the Godzillas nearly drowned.
Oh my god.
Yeah, in like a little shallow, like 2-foot pool.
Oh my god.
Because he fell over face down in the suit, and the suit weighed 200 pounds, and he couldn't get up.
Oh my god.
And so, yeah, like a bunch of people had to rush out and pull him out. Be a fun bit of 80s trivia if you knocked Sorrento into a small puddle and drowned.
Actually, that would, honestly, you would learn something. Like, I feel like...
I guess you could call that learning something.
It's a piece of worthless trivia that's it's pop trivia. It's cool, whatever. But it's better than, hey, do you remember Joust? Hey, do you remember War Games? So
they get to the door.
So they get to the door and the three of them unlock it, and then there's a flash of light and everyone in the entire sector dies. Remember that bomb that was casually mentioned for a sentence in earlier in the book and also last podcast? Well, it turns out the Sixers had it, and their backup plan was to figure out how the gate is opened by watching those three and then detonating the bomb and killing everyone. And then they had a bunch of guys sitting in a different sector waiting for a signal to come in.
Just had to confirm this. Scott Pilgrim versus the World came out 1 year before this. Just saying, like, the hero had an extra life.
Spoilers, Ben, even though we already went over it. Wade has an extra life! And then he finds Artie's Air Jordans or whatever they are, and he jumps into the gate to complete the final challenge.
You find H's Air Jordans.
I thought they were Artie's.
I'm pretty sure they're H's. Oh, shit, you're right, it's Artemis.
Yeah, that's right. I won the trivia challenge. Where's my $100 billion?
Your prize is your virginity. You've gotten it back.
Okay, so they use the shoes and they complete a challenge, which is say another movie, play another game, do
some
more
stuff. It's the exact same thing as the first one.
The first two. It's the previous two combined. And then he shows up in Halliday's room, and he uses a computer, the password of which is the name of Morrow's wife's D&D name. Just, whatever, man. And then he has to play Atari 2600 Adventure, because that's where the original Easter egg is from. But that original room, the Easter egg, was a credit to the creator, but that has now been erased for the actual Easter egg. So the creator's credit has been taken out so that Halliday could add his stupid egg. Wow.
Can we just think about, like, how weird it is that Halliday needed his successor to know about that crush? But, like, had he not just randomly asked Ogden Morrow about that? Had Ogden Morrow not just randomly appeared to invite them to his home?
That sounds like the rest of this book, Ben. Solved with, thankfully, I already
but
knew.
If
so
you
and
were
so.
A master game designer and you wanted somebody to know something about your life to solve a puzzle, wouldn't it have been part of the riddle? Like, wouldn't it have been like, wouldn't you have mentioned like a princess or something that needed saving? Or,
nope.
Or like referenced
it was
some
a reference
80s
to a
movie
or something.
Yeah, wouldn't you reference some 80s movie where like the dude loves his best friend or something?
No, the reference is I used my girlfriend's password for my computer or my friend's girlfriend's password or some shit like that. I don't even remember.
It's your D&D character's name, so you obviously have to know that very specific thing that Anorak was in love with whoever. And the only, like, honestly, the only way you, like, could know this is if you talked to Ogden.
Yeah, well, shut up, because he just got $400 billion. Oh, yeah, this is where Wade has the beginning of his arc. Before he enters the gate, he says that he's going to split the money.
Page 350 out of 360. Yeah. Wade's arc begins.
I'm going to split the money four ways. And he needs their help. He needs their help because he comes across a game that he doesn't immediately know. He comes across Tempest. He's like, I don't know how to do that. And Artie is like, don't worry. I'm a pro Tempest player.
No, she says, don't worry. I know a cheat.
Well, yeah, okay. That is what
And then
happened.
He cheats. Did anyone else think that was weird?
No, because there's a reference.
In Joust, he talks about how it's cheating to have somebody else play it for you or to like to use a bot to play it for you, but like
yeah,
it's okay to just cheat.
Yeah, he cheats at the end, but he cheats for good cause because he's gonna finally split that money four ways, Ben.
Okay.
So yeah, then Halliday's avatar, his pre-programmed avatar, is like, hey, you did a great job, you're my worthy successor. Could have been Nolan sitting there. It wouldn't have mattered. And then he's like, I'm going to give you all the powers of God mode. And then I'm going to give you this magic button that can destroy the entire oasis and tells Wade that the real lesson was that go outside every once in a while and don't be like me. Fuck you, Halliday. Fuck you and your stupid fucking contest. He designed a contest to make someone exactly like him, and then the moral of the contest is don't be like me.
Oh, and that's the thing. He didn't design the contest to find someone specifically like him. He designed the contest to create someone specifically like him.
Yes, that's true. That's even worse. And then the ending moral is completely contradictory to everything that has come before.
Yeah. Wade and Artemis get together.
Whoa, hold on. We got one more thing I wanted to point out. Wade, he resurrects his friends, and only his friends, none of the other Gunters who all died. And the Oasis has a permadeath system, so you die and you lose all your valuable crap. And also, this currency is just as valuable, if not more so, than real-world currency. So he enlisted hundreds of thousands of people to help him out, got them all killed, and then, when he could revive them all, he didn't. He let them lose their fucking livelihoods on this shit.
Yeah, he bankrupted all of his allies, so that, like, their whole thing was, he's like, I'll keep the Oasis the way it's supposed to be. A nightmare. But again, that just points back to, like, he had the vague idea. He wanted that story beat of everyone coming together, but he didn't want to earn that beat, and he didn't want to do anything with it. He just knew that was a cool thing that should happen. Then it happened, and he was utterly uninterested in the implications of it happening.
Yep. And then Wade and Artie get together. Here's the completion of that story arc, Ben. I'm glad that we built up to this, okay? So he finally meets Artie, and he's like, oh, you're beautiful. I know you have this little mark over your eye, but, like, and you're so beautiful. And
it then essentially he's like, only makes you more attractive. Like, you have a stylish cosplay mark over your eye.
Yeah. And then here's his arc. He's like, now we're going to go save the world, right? And she's like, oh, you had a change of heart? And he's basically like, yeah, unless you want to go into, like, space, like I plan. But, like, you know, whatever. I'll do whatever it takes to, like, be with you and get in your pants. So, like,
he doesn't say any of this.
He does. He does, Ben.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He says we're going to do that thing you wanted to do. Yeah, and then he says, yeah. Then he says, I'm up for building. I thought you were joking about this. He said, like, but if you want to build the spaceship, we could do that.
No, I'm being totally serious. I'm not making that up. That is legitimately, he's like, yeah, let's build that spaceship. Like, if you want to build the spaceship, like, you know.
And then he dedicated the book to his wife and child.
Oh, God. Yeah, he's like, if it means I get to spend the rest of my life with you. And she's like, we'll have to see. We just met, you know. And he's like, I'm in love with you. And she's not like, I think that, like, we're taking this way too fast. I'm a go. Give me my 100 billion and I'm out.
Speaking of not financially compensating the people who helped you get to where you are, finally, I want to thank all the filmmakers, actors, artists, musicians, programmers, game designers, and geeks whose work I've paid tribute to in this story.
Yeah.
These people have all entertained and enlightened me, and I hope that, like Halliday's Hunt, this book will inspire others to seek out their creations.
Dude, he's paying them
exposure.
I paid
you in publicity.
Yeah.
You know how those programmers still get royalties for the Atari games they wrote, right? When you download a hacked ROM of them?
Yeah, I was like, to be fair, they never got royalties. That was the whole point of the Easter egg. They couldn't even get their names. Is there anything else you want to say about this fucking book?
I guess here's something I actually do want to talk about.
Vacuum-headed fuck bunnies. Oh my
if you
God.
Ever want to, if you're like, if you're thinking I'm being too hard on Ernest Cline, if you think maybe I shouldn't have made this so personal, go ahead and read his famous poem, Nerd Porn Auteur. And if you still think this is a dude you want to emulate, we can talk. What do you think the appeal of the book is?
Okay, we're going to get into the conversation about what's the appeal of the Sword Art Online or Log Horizon, the not being in this reality anymore. I don't think it's just 80s nostalgia, because I'm sure there are a lot of people younger than me who didn't grow up anywhere near the 80s who probably enjoy this book way more than I do.
Absolutely there are. I mean, I've read glowing reviews. I know people who love this story, and it's not bad to have that escapist fantasy. Like, there are stories about virtual worlds that I like, and there is some, it is a wish fulfillment story of what if all the things I was interested in and was good at made me important.
Yeah, with that underlying current of horrific depression and suicidal ideation.
Well, it's like I said, I got to keep going back to discussing, I guess if this episode, this part three, had a point, it's Ready Player One is the shape of a good story. And we talked about this with The Fold a little bit, of how when you read something, not paying attention to the details. Now, that's much harder to do with Ready Player One, because everything is wrong. Just everything is wrong. But I can definitely see how if you're kind of just taking in the vague outline of the story, when you finish it, you would have the impression that this was a good story with characters who had arcs and were witty and maybe funny. I hate Wade.
But he had that great arc at the end where he was totally okay with putting his selfish dreams aside if it got him laid.
Yeah, they said the things they had to say. Basically, that puts a bow on the, like, you can't criticize this for being a nihilistic, meaningless, mean-spirited, awful story, because, well, Ben, the theme was obviously all these things you're saying about the Oasis. Ernest Cline obviously knows that because he acknowledges it at the end. It's like, okay.
I mean, would that help, like, at the end of a book if they just go, and all of that was wrong. The end.
That's essentially what they did. Everything I have heard about Ready Player 2, it makes me think that Ernest Cline, again, he realized, like, obviously, how could he not realize, as many people have been yelling at him about this all these years. And then he got help from Steven Spielberg and other people to sort of address some of the problems with Wade. So I think he, in Ready Player 2, I get the impression that he's making an attempt to address many of the things I've pointed out over the course of these episodes. And if that's the case, I am willing to give him credit for that, you know, for whatever my approval is worth to him. Yeah, with just the text of this book, I don't get the impression that Ready Player 2 was in his mind when he wrote this book. And so I guess I kind of want to preempt that counter argument to what we've said in this review / discussion is I don't think the Ernest Cline who wrote Ready Player 1 gave a shit about the world or humanity or society.
No, absolutely not.
It seems like the obvious course for these characters is that they would immediately fall apart, as none of them are even remotely equipped, except perhaps Artemis, to deal with the day-to-day functions of running an extremely large multinational corporation. And even Artemis, not really. That's one of those things that's like, it's a cheap shot, because like a lot of 80s movies, it's like if you look at the end, then yeah, the characters should not have the rewards they get.
Haroon in the Sea of Stories mentioned this, where you have your happy ending, and that's all you see.
Yes.
He's like, you know, it has to come at the end of things, otherwise it just lasts for a little while.
They got their happy ending, but obviously it can't last. Obviously this relationship is going to have problems. I am kind of given hope by the fact that Ready Player 2 starts out with problems between Wade and Artemis, or with Artemis having already left Wade. I think that's...
Yeah, I think that they've totally already broken up.
That's where this logically goes. So I am glad he realized that. I'm glad he's willing to take a more critical look at Wade in the future. So I don't want it to be all bad, but I think this book is a lot darker, maybe, or it has a darkness to it. And I think that's why I really react so strongly to it, because there is kind of just a hopelessness to this book.
It's a downer of a book, even with all that money.
But I think a lot of people, and it's fine if you understand why I say it's hopeless and you just don't feel that way. I get that, because that's, again, how I feel about Twilight. Like, I understand that relationship is toxic, and I still kind of find myself rooting for it anyway, just because I'm manipulated by the story, but I understand I'm being manipulated and I'm along for the ride. So if that's how you feel about Ready Player One, I get that. But in some of the reactions I see, I also see that it seems like a lot of people don't understand where the darkness is. And I hope, I guess if there's one takeaway from our series on this, if you did not see some of the problems with Ready Player One on your first read through, we were funny and kind of dismissive, and don't take that personally, and please don't think we're attacking anyone, but keep in mind some of the criticisms we have the next time you venture into Ready Player One, and maybe see if you could see a little bit about what we're saying, because Gamergate was not too long after this, and I've heard a lot of people point out that, like, this isn't really just a celebration of nerd culture, it's a celebration of a very specific kind of nerd culture. Oh, it's very gatekeepy with the way the Gunters... There is an appropriate way to enjoy the media that they like. And if you don't enjoy it that way, you're a sellout, man. I hope he learned. I think a lot of people have learned a lot since Gamergate, and I've noticed the culture around pop culture and games sort of shifting a bit, and I think that's good. Thank you for attending my TED Talk.
Yeah. Next week, we're going to get a palate cleanser, and we're going to talk about Neuromancer. And then next month...
Are we going to get a palate cleanser? Because now I'm going to relate it to Ready Player One.
I, for one, am going to try and leave Ready Player One.
I'm not. Yeah, we're not going to talk about Ready Player One. We may do Ready Player Two. That'd be on the schedule for next year.
Yeah, we'll
tweet
see.
Tweet at us if you want to see
Yeah, exactly.
That.
If this gets Dune levels of downloads, then fine.
I'm going to read it regardless. I'll tell you that right now. I'm interested to see if he learned.
All right. Where are we reading next month? Southern Book Club's Guide to Slaying Vampires. Come on, Ben.
Next month, we're reading Southern Book Club's Guide to Slaying Vampires. You can guess which one of us picked it.
By Grady Hendry.
And then, of course, please, if you like this episode or if you like what we're doing here, share us on social media, tell your friends about us. We're trying to grow the podcast, and that's really the best way you can help. You can follow us on Twitter at WABpod. And if you're interested in my extraordinarily way too long review of Ready Player One, you can check that out over at blog.wordsaboutbooks.ninja. Nate is also promising us there will be some sort of post on his views of Twilight. That's something to look out for.
Cowabunga.
Sayonara, okyak-san.
Now that you've made it to the end, it's time for me to unveil our own Easter egg hunt. That's right. Hidden in one of our many, many episodes of Words About Books is an Easter egg for you to find. So go download every single episode and listen to them over and over again, and you just might find it. Here is your first clue. No, we're back. Hello. Seriously, server. Here's the opportunity. Do we feel with my stomach? I'm asking you to see what's this week. Yeah, I see you in your chest. Absolutely. Good luck.